The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. All through the month of October, you can save on XT5 crossovers while donating to a local cause. That's right. Lease a luxury XT5 for only $449 a month with zero due at signing. Just sign and drive, and a portion of your sale will go to My Hope Chest, a great, great cause. You can visit them at myhopechest.org. And Ed Morris Automotive across the company. This is their fifth anniversary in their drive for hope, helping out this great cause. Visit Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or go to edmorriscadillactampa.com. And at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, there are many great offers as well. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. Sign and Drive 2017 clearance event is in full force. One of the offers we've had on JoeBucksFan.com this month that ends at the end of the month is the 2017 Cadillac CTS 2.0 liter turbo, lease for $309 a month, zero due at signing. All the details are at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. You want to visit them at EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. It's a tremendous website. Check out the 2017 clearance event. The new 2018s are up, and of course, the fantastic pre-owned selection at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon.
All right, Coach, you know, we give Ira a lot of crap here on the podcast. He says he knows you, he's your buddy, he loves you. You know, what can you say about Ira that you spent years around him as a journalist, as a guy?
Well, let me tell you this. He's got the greatest voice I ever heard. I can't imitate him well, but he's a friend of mine, and he's a guy I consider great at what he does because he does the work, and he watches practice. He takes pride in you know, getting the story correct, and he's just been loyal. I've always considered him a friend, and I consider him an expert when it comes to pro football.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Happy Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. It's a rough Tuesday, Mr. Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz with Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com, and we are here diving into this brutal, brutal loss of the Bucks with the sage of Tampa Bay sports. The man is on Sirius XM Radio every Wednesday at 5. He's on Fox 13 television every Sunday at 10:30. He's at Publix getting the BOGOs every Thursday as well when they come out. He's Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you, man?
Steven, on this fine Tuesday, I must try to separate my emotions. I must stay logical, gentlemen, from the man who brought you the following statement. I believe this team is ready to get on a roll with a 5-game winning streak. Now, look, when that game started, I believed it. I said, oh, look at this. The Falcons lost. They looked terrible in the fourth quarter at home against Miami. Are you kidding me? Carolina had already lost at home Thursday night to a pretty good Philadelphia team. Here's the Bucks' opportunity. Here we go. And I walked in to the bedroom after watching the first quarter, and my wife was doing a crossword puzzle. She looked at me. I didn't even have to say anything. What's wrong? She thought I was having heart palpitations. I said, I may have witnessed the worst first quarter in Buccaneer history. 40 years of Buck football. And we know most of those 40 years, gentlemen, have been putrid. That was disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. I'm putting 80% of the onus on the defense. Not that the offense was any great shakes until the game was out of hand. 80% goes to Mr. Michael Smith and his cronies on that staff. Steve, what am I going to say? That's two visits to Arizona. Don't you want to slap that team back in the face after embarrassing you last year? Instead, you lay down once again. And we know what the word was coming out of the locker room. And we'll get to that for this podcast. I think it's the most dangerous and chilling word in the National Football League. Flat.
Oh.
Flat.
I thought you were going to use a different four-letter word.
Do we come out on this podcast flat, Mr. Isbitz? And I ain't making $400,000 a tackle either, or missed tackle.
Not you, Ira, not you. So I guess the question of the day for you, because I think if most Bucks fans ran into you on the streets of Newport Richey, what they might ask you, they might ask you, Ira, what was the worst part of that loss to Arizona? What's the worst part to you?
The worst part to me was, and I was just telling Lee this while he was eating half of my potato chips. Steve, listen to what I'm about to say. The Cardinals' first three possessions were at their own 25, their own 13, and their own 5. They scored 3 touchdowns. they did whatever they wanted. I don't remember one negative play in those first three drives. The holes for Peterson were enormous. The coverages for Larry Fitzgerald were atrocious. The pressure on Palmer was non-existent. Guys, this is an Arizona team missing their best player, David Johnson. He's gone. He hasn't played. They're struggling. They're 2-3. People are screaming about Bruce Arians. What the hell's going on with Arians? We got to replace him. Palmer, he's on his last legs. Here comes the greatest tonic in the world, the Buck defense, which played pretty well against New England. 9 days to prepare. Did they look prepared, Mr. DeKemper? And to make it worse, what does Mr. McCoy say after the game? They didn't do anything that we didn't expect. How's that going to look to the Glazers?
It's to the point that whatever Gerald McCoy says doesn't matter. It's just noise. I mean,
he's supposed to be a spokesman.
Supposed to be a spokesman. Supposed to be a leader. So if the team was flat, look in the mirror, Mr. McCoy. You want to be a leader, then you got to accept responsibility. If that's your defense, and you were flat, and your teammates are flat, look in the mirror.
Steve, how can you be flat?
Here's the thing. There are layers of flat. And that's, I think...
Well, whatever the layers are, they reached all of them.
I know. That's what I'm saying is, okay, you come out flat for a series. Offense is flat a couple of series.
You miss a tackle.
Defense gives up a big play after a flat series. You're down 10-0 before you know it. Okay, that's coming out flat. Coming out 31-0 or 24-0 and just getting sledded right over left and right on the same stuff that everybody knew was coming. That's a whole nother level of flat.
Is there any doubt that the Cardinals might have run up 600 yards?
If they wanted to.
If they wanted to.
You know what that reminded me of? When Jameis was in college and Florida State was number one in the country, and they were playing Maryland, if I remember right, they had a 40-0 lead in the first half. That's what that reminded me of. There are really no words to describe it. The only thing I'm going to say now, I want to be clear here. I am not advocating in any way, shape, or form anyone to be fired. But this is the type of game that gets people fired. I mean, it was that bad. I already know the Glazers as well as anyone. I'll just say this. The Tennessee Ready game, I heard the Glazers were so outraged. It was weeks before they could talk to any of their employees with the Bucks.
Which game was that?
The Tennessee Ready game, when Mariota ran up and down on Lovie Smith like he never prepared 5 minutes for the game. The Capitol collapse, that was basically that was the end for Lovie. This is one of those kind of games. This has a stench of a classic Raheem Morris, Greg Schiano, curb stomping. Okay. It has the same stench.
Steve, now, look, I take no pleasure in saying this. This is rough stuff. But this is the type of game, and they're at the kind of crossroads, where all of a sudden the coaches are looking at the personnel guys saying we need better talent, and the personnel guys are talking amongst themselves saying we got a lot of talent over here. What's going on with this coaching staff? That's a big danger, Steve, going ahead the next couple of weeks.
Well, that's got to be where they are right now. I mean, there's got to be a reaction. I don't think, I'll say this, I think that leans more toward the personnel side. I don't think Dirk Cutter looks at his offense and says, I need more horses. I don't think that's the case. And defensively, I don't think he does. Look, Cutter watched this team last year. They went 6-2 to close the second half. They averaged 17 points allowed. Same coordinator, same guys primarily. Does Quan Alexander mean that much to this team?
One guy.
Did they lose that much with Akeem Spence walking out the door? I mean, this is not exactly a different team. So I don't think Cutter is going there yet, but I understand what you're saying.
Steve and I crucified Lovie Smith for inability to adjust when Quan Alexander was not available. If Mike Smith can't adjust because of Quan Alexander, if that's the problem, then we got to crucify Mike Smith like Steve and I crucified Lovie.
I'm going to give you guys a couple numbers, just a couple. I don't want to be Thomas Bassinger over here and barrage you. But I'll give you a couple. Opposing passers, 71% completion. 71.
70.
That is Lovie Smith.
70.9.
70. Point, you've already done it. That is Lovie Smith. Third down, 46%. Last year they led the league.
Yeah.
Is this all Quan Alexander? And I've saved the best for last, gentlemen. I have saved the best. This is where DeKemper and Isbitz both dropped their microphones. Here we go. 24 points a game, which is lousy, but not record-setting for this franchise. Yards per game, five games.
Mm-hmm.
403. Oh. Now, here's the sentence. That would be the worst in franchise history.
Ouch.
Franchise history.
Wow.
Worse than Lehman Bennett's boys.
Worse
from
than
the
Lovey.
Mid-80s. Worse than Lovey in 2014.
I got
4-0-3, gentlemen. And wow. That's two teams that I think called off the dogs in the Vikings and Arizona.
Yes.
They called the dogs off, Stephen.
Yes.
4-0-3. What is going on that side of the ball, gents?
I have a quick interjection here. When we were just talking about Quan Alexander. Mind you, Quan was playing against the Bears, and Mike Glennon was converting third downs right and left. So I can't scapegoat the defense for not having Quan Alexander. They were getting lit up with Quan third downs.
This was a very healthy team that went into Arizona. Very healthy. Of course you're missing.
You mean
missing
with the Bears? You mean
against the Bears when Quan was healthy? Wasn't he even playing that game?
Well, he only played, I think, like 18 snaps or so.
They were converting third downs on him.
Early? Because I know he had a pick.
They finished about 50%.
I think it all went downhill really after he left.
I mean, I haven't gone play by play, but I remember them. I remember Glennon converting third downs all game long.
He did. I think it was mostly after Quan was out, because I know they had the pick.
And Quan's not a pass defensive kind of guy to begin with.
Now,
if he has a weak link, that is it.
Steve, if you get shredded by Buffalo's offense on Sunday, all hell's going to break loose, because Buffalo is not a good offensive team.
Ira, let's not go to Sunday yet.
We're
nowhere finished with Arizona yet. Now, first, in a moment of calm and peace, how about those Ed Morris offers we heard about to start this podcast, Ira? That's no trick or treat. That's no trick.
You mentioned them in the same sentence as the Arizona debacle, Stephen?
It's all treat at Ed Morris, Ira. No trick, no Halloween shenanigans. All great stuff there, and it's good to see you wearing all the Ed. I know you got the Ed Morris underwear on today, but I can't see that. So, but you're always got the gear going. All right, Ira. Listen,
I still can't get over what happened. I still can't get over it.
Listen, you brought up the flat thing. Your column is fantastic. I love a good nursery rhyme.
A little nursery rhyme to start with.
If everybody hasn't seen that, check it out, joebucksfan.com.
And it's not a Dice Clay kind of nursery rhyme.
And it is not.
Yeah,
it
no Hickory not. Dickory Dock.
That's right.
Not for Ed Morris
Cadillac. Little Miss Muffet set on her tuffet.
It's just, you know.
Not for Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa or Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. You want to check them out, edmorriscadillactampa.com. At edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. So, Ira, look, well, you talked about flat. You laid it out. Now, I know you placed your 80% of the blame, and that was on the defense, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So then where does the coaching staff fit in here? Cutter, Mike Smith, is this just all on them for not having a team ready? Who's the leadership responsibility for just showing up with the shooting blanks?
Cutter and Mike Smith. Did the players play well? Of course not. But, look, guys, I didn't make the trip to Arizona. So what does a man do? He goes to Buccaneers.com a couple hours after the game. He looks at the videos. He sees Cutter walking in like death warmed over at the podium, like he wanted to go into the corner and not come out. And I don't blame him. And he used the word embarrassment. Good for him. Embarrassment.
Even better, he said it's the worst first half of football he's ever seen.
And he's seen a lot of football. But, Steve, here's my point. Videos with Levante David, Gerald McCoy, and Brent Grimes. All three of them said they came out flat. They didn't hear what the other said. They all said it in separate interviews.
You almost wonder if they're coached up to say that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if they think that's an excuse, that is a damning indictment on the players and the coaching staff. And you know what? This is the one time, I think more than any other, when Cutter says after a loss, which he always does, it starts with me. I think this is the first time it really does start with him, and he better start believing it, because the Glazers are hearing the flat stuff coming out of the locker room, and that ain't going over very well in the Glazer households.
I was wondering, you know the Glazers better than anyone, Ira. You're not suggesting the Glazers are starting to flip through their phone directories on their cell phones for new employees.
Steve, they don't want to be known as the most trigger-happy owners in the league after a lot of stability with Dungy and Gruden. You can't dump people after every 2 years.
I call baloney on that. If they didn't want to be considered trigger-happy owners, then we wouldn't have had the last three coaches like this. Come on, Ira. They don't care. They just want to win. I don't think...
Steve, this guy just went 9-7.
What Lee's suggesting, I don't think is going on. I don't think the Glazers yet. I'm just...
Well, that's why I was asking. I don't think so either.
But I mean, Ira wasn't giving a straight shot there. I don't think they're freaking out yet. It's one game. You're 3-3 against Buffalo. Everybody's happy. Okay, Irma and injuries and Quan's back, and we're 3-3, and we haven't even played a damn division game
yet. Steve, if you finish 7-9, Cutter will enter year three with a lot of pressure.
Sure.
A lot of pressure.
A ton of pressure.
When you talk about pressure, how about the man upstairs who doesn't have a contract?
No question about it.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. That's a whole nother plate. After this game, it's a whole new level of mess for Jason Light. That's the reality. Because, as Lee said earlier, there are games that tell stories and, you know, are just absolute lightning bolts to an organization, positive and negative. We saw some positive ones last year, but we also saw this thing and stuff we saw in Lovey and other regimes. This is a bad one for Jason Light because of where the failures are. On top of, you know, you can't blame Jason Light for the team coming out flat.
No.
But you can blame them for Carson Palmer having nobody breathing
That's
on him.
Correct.
You can blame him for Vernon Hargraves looking like he doesn't belong in the NFL.
Now, to me, that's more coaching because he looked competent last year. He looks incompetent this
competent,
year.
But you know, you do draft a guy. You draft a guy, as Light would tell you, any GM would tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Because of his, you know, from the neck up. And Hargraves is not showing it from the neck up.
I don't disagree. You know? But to me, that's a coaching thing. If he's gotten worse gotten worse, that's a coaching thing to me. To me.
Yeah, boys, it's everything.
We didn't even get a referendum on little Patrick Murray yesterday. Well, that had to top the whole thing off.
All right, Ira, quick question. A lot of fans want to know. Bucks are down 24-0, end of the first half. They had first and goal, three sloppy, ugly tries at it. You're, what, 4-6 yards out. Do you not put 3 points on the board?
Bad decision. Are they going to win that game? Probably not. 95% chance they're going to lose it. You go in with something positive. 24-3, okay, you're three scores down. Instead of four, maybe. You're not going to make every two-point conversion. Bad decision. If it's fourth down from the one, okay, you go for it. You're at the one. Fourth, you can't come away empty. You got to get something positive. Bad decision by Cutter. And that's not hindsight.
You know what? I have zero thought about it. Because to me, that's white noise. That's nitpicking.
Possibly.
You know, that's not seeing forest for the trees. They were down 31-0.
But for fans who are examining Cutter's play calling and decision making, it's another piece of wood on the fire.
There's bigger fish to fry than that. I mean, that's like, hey, my transmission's out, but did you notice my doorknob's on loose?
But he still had a decision to make, and I think he made the wrong
decision. Yeah, I hear what Lee's saying. You asked me, it's funny, you asked me what I did at halftime, who I talked to, what did I say to my wife? She wasn't there, but I was cursing up a storm when he didn't kick that field goal because that's just stupid. That looked like a coach that was overmatched. Okay, here we are, first down, you throw to Doug Martin, hits him right in the chest, bounces off at the goal line. Okay, second down, what's his name, scrambles, doesn't throw the ball away, they burn a timeout. They're out, and then he scrambles, flicks it, does a Derek Jeter flick to O.J. Howard, who didn't know what was coming and whatever. Okay, so you're incompetent on three plays, and you're at the four-yard line, kick the field goal, run in, you get the ball back in the second half. It would have been 24-3, maybe 24-10. That's a football game. Instead, Cutter was just like, Coach, here's the thing. Lee's right. 95%, you got no shot of winning that game. Game's over. But a coach cannot think that way. A coach has to think we're in the game. That's how you play
how
the
you
game.
Get back in?
And what's
how
the best thing in? To do right now?
Kick the damn field goal and go in.
I'll give you a bigger bone to chew on when it comes to Cutter and his decisions. This is a much bigger one. This is over-encompassing one game. Cutter always talks about fast starts. They're not doing any fast starts. All last week, the narrative coming out of One Buck Palace was, you know, when Jameis in a two-minute drill, you know, when the pressure's on, that's when Jameis shines. Well, you know what? If he plays better in up-tempo offense, Coach Cutter, maybe you might want to use up-tempo offense a little bit more in the first half to have fast starts, to complement Jameis's talents. Don't shoehorn Jameis into a Don Coryell offense if that isn't working. Oh, by the way, I don't agree with this necessarily. And there are some stats that suggest Jameis is not inaccurate, as some people are led to believe, with downfield passing. But I'll play devil's advocate here for you, Ira. If you believe that Jameis is inaccurate throwing downfield, then why is Cutter going to the well time and again? Hello? You know, that's like having a stiff who throws flat curveballs as a relief pitcher and a manager telling him, don't throw anything but junk at this hitter, even though he can't throw junk.
Well, Steve, we can't be hypocrites. Now, we've been saying they should throw downfield four or five times. First play, well, tried that, it. They're not hitting it. They're not hitting it.
I'll agree with that to scare the defense, but don't rely on it every okay. other series.
Steve, couple of points on the other side of the ball, which they're not getting a pass either here. Let's talk about offense for a minute. Couple of points. One. Offensive line pushed around all day. Can somebody block Chandler Jones? Steve, just think about this, guys. Think about this. When you write on the blackboard in the three days before the Arizona game, this is what you write. Larry Fitzgerald, Adrian Peterson, Chandler Jones.
And they all
That's
three.
What you write. You're 0 for 3. Chandler Jones is everywhere. Every time Winston's throwing, every time Fitzpatrick is throwing, he's in the vicinity. Somebody block him. Number two, and I say this with all due respect, I've called Mike Evans the best player on this team for a couple of years now. I'm not backing off that, although this year, I could argue Cameron Brate's been better than Mike Evans, even though he had a rough game against New England. He did. He's made some sensational catches this season, Brate. Sensational. He gives up his body. He takes a shot to make that catch. His hands are outstanding. New England game, notwithstanding. But Mike Evans has played two road games, gentlemen. Xavier Rhodes and Patrick Peterson, two of the elite cornerbacks in this league, have taken it on their shoulders without a lot of help to neutralize this guy.
They did.
That's exactly what they've done. Mm-hmm. If Mike Evans is going to be considered, as he does in his own mind, on the par with Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Beckham, he's got to come up big against the best the NFL has to offer. No one guy is supposed to stop Mike Evans, and he was very frustrated, Steve, you could tell. And the only times he did anything was when they went into a soft zone or Patrick Peterson was yucking it up on the sidelines. He didn't do anything against Patrick Peterson. I want more out of Mike Evans at this point. I don't think he's having a very good season.
It's understood. Understood, Ira. And you know what? That's one reason why you don't pay guys in advance when you don't have to. Let them play out a contract. It's not a disease. You don't have to just start throwing checks around.
Sure.
Let them play it out. Make them earn it. See what they really are over as much time as possible. How many teams lose players because they didn't pay them early enough? If they want to retain your own guy and you offer a market value contract at the time, he always comes back.
Didn't the Glazers once tell me at a spring meeting, we've never lost a player that we really wanted to keep.
Yeah.
They did say that.
Yeah, well, I hate that. That's a pet peeve of mine, but we'll see.
Wait a minute. Going along with your point. Don't pay him when you don't have to. They're doing that with Jason Light. They're taking a wait and see with Jason Light, gentlemen.
Sure.
You know.
They are taking a wait and see.
I got to go back to what Steve and I were talking about earlier. I think the world of Jason, and I hope he sticks around. And, you know, I could go on a rant about the defensive ends. What edge rush. But it just this shows you how it's an organizational issue that you have to wonder, what in the hell are people thinking? What are people looking at? Now, I got to be fair. What I'm about to say is the Bucks brought Lamar Houston in for a tryout last week, a workout. For whatever reason, they didn't sign him.
They punted.
Now, again, I got to be fair. I don't know if his agent was using Light. I don't know if he tried to jam Light for money. Who knows? Or if Light simply said, nah, he's not good enough. But this just, you know, Bucks fans want to shove their head in the toilet when they hear this. Lamar Houston, defensive end, who has had production in the NFL. The Bucks passed on him. Again, we don't know why. Could be legitimate reasons. Maybe they saw him on Kennedy Avenue trying to do something untoward. I don't know. But anyway, they passed. Houston, who I know this organization thinks the world of Bill O'Brien, Houston picks him up. And what happens Sunday, Steve? Lamar Houston gets a sack. And
Houston in dire straits with J.J. Watt and Merciless, and they pick him up.
And in one day, in one game, Lamar Houston has as many sacks as the entire Bucks edge rushers for five games.
It's a fun stat. Lee and I have played with one sack from defensive ends this year through five games. Now, Ira, you love these stats. 2010, the Bucks amazingly only had 10.5 sacks from defensive ends, which is why they ran out and drafted two. We mentioned this before, but
what a pair that was.
They're on pace for a lot worse than that. But, all right, Sage, you know, people are here for your wisdom since you are...
Wisdom? I got him on a five-game winning streak.
Yeah, I don't, where did you go wrong? Let's put it... sum it up in 1 minute. Where did you go wrong? Because, obviously, you went wrong.
I went wrong. You can't go more wrong, Lee. I just felt the extra time to prepare, getting a couple of bodies back, and Levante David did come back, so did T.J. Ward, and... I didn't think Arizona was any good, and I still don't think they're very good.
Are some fraud lines distracting you, Ira?
No, absolutely not. Some guy's eating a beet salad over there. But
he's looking around like there's some fraud lines. Steve,
I didn't see this coming. I mean, the defense played pretty well against New England.
No, I know. You didn't see it coming, but you think is there one big thing you think you missed? Was it just, would you say it's the heart of this football team? Is that what you missed? Is it the leadership of Jameis you overestimated, the coaching staff? What is it?
Something's wrong.
Something's wrong.
Something's wrong in the locker room. Something's wrong. They're not ready. By the way, one more thing that's wrong. And think about this. High draft picks. Jameis Winston, Vernon Hargraves, Noah Spence.
No, you're not going to put... Hold on. That's.
Wait a minute. I didn't finish the second part of the sentence. Did you hear my trio?
Yes, sir.
They're not getting better. Yeah. They're not getting better. They're not being developed. To me, that's on the coaching staff, including Cutter with Jameis Winston.
Fair.
He's not getting better.
It's fair right now. It's fair.
Jameis has turned. He's cut down on the turnovers. He's getting better. He's still on pace. Well, I don't know about that. Leading up to the Arizona game, he was on pace to snap 4,000 yards once again, which would have been 3 years in a row that no NFL player has done.
Empty statistics, Mr. DeKemper.
Well, I can't go. I can't go that he's. I know where you're coming from. Has he hit a ceiling? Maybe.
Nothing for three quarters against New England. Nothing before he was hurt yesterday. Didn't play well against Minnesota.
I can't lump him in with Hargrave. I mean, that's hyperbole.
I said not improving. I didn't say he hasn't been terrible. Hargraves has been bad.
And Spence has been a non-factor since he blew his shoulder out. So I can't. I know where you're going,
Ira,
but I can't.
I said it again. I'll say it again. If Spence is hurt, sit him.
Well, this goes two directions, and we'll move on from the DEs. But, you know, Lee talked about the DE they brought in, but they didn't sign. Houston. Okay, well, if Spence is playing hurt, which that's a bit of a mystery, but if he's playing hurt, well, then you certainly should have signed the damn guy. You don't sign the guy, and Spence is out there invisible again.
I've been watching him. He's not coming close.
And, you know, going into the season, he was no factor against the run. Work in progress. This Gumby stuff. Come on. He's all messed up. It's we'll see where it goes.
I got a real quick question before we move away from the DNs. This shows you how desperate, and I want your feedback on this, Ira. This shows you how desperate the Bucs are. But apparently not desperate enough to sign Lamar Houston. But then again, this is how desperate they are. They drag a 53-year-old all-star first baseman out of retirement and put him on the roster. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we hit this last time, the Will Clark thing.
Will Clark.
A 53-year-old former all-star first baseman for your San Francisco Giants.
Guys, this has been a problem for years. Jason Light is listening to this podcast, which we think he does. Go out and get yourself a defensive end. Go find somebody.
You know what I would do? Honest to God, it's this point of desperation. I would sit down with DeMarcus Ware, and I would just start throwing $100 bills on the floor at his feet. And keep going and keep going until he says yes.
Now, he's used to playing in a 3-4, Lee. How do you like them apples?
So Will Clark is a better option?
All right.
Going back to the stat I mentioned from 2010, the Bucs were 10-6 in 2010, should have made the playoffs if the refs didn't blow a call, and they had 10.5 sacks and no edge rush. You can win games without an edge rush in this league if you have an offense. Now, look what Josh Freeman had out there. We had way less weapons than... But he pulled
games out of his body.
He had a running game. He made fewer mistakes, and he had a hell of a season. But it's interesting. But, yeah, still, 2-3, different spot.
Hey, by the way, hold on. Before you move on to another topic, Steve, we haven't even noted this.
Uh-oh.
They have 6 sacks in 5 games. Disgraceful. Deplorable. Mike Smith can talk all about quarterback hits all he wants. They ain't getting many of those either. I got news for you, Mr. Smith. But, guys, let's remember this. They haven't faced a mobile quarterback yet. They got 6 sacks in 5 games. It's a whole different challenge.
And then comes Cam Newton.
You almost got a smell of Tennessee Ready game coming.
So you've got Tyrod Taylor, Cam Newton, and Drew Brees. That's your non-mobile quarterback crew coming up next. I want to ask you this, Ira, because it's important since we spent so much time on it in the offseason. And I'm not picking on you, but it's worth...
Don't pick on me. I just lost my first game in the fantasy league. I was 5-0.
It's worth the question, okay? The question is, why did you go so wrong on Adrian Peterson? Now, here's what I'm saying, is that, look, we all saw yesterday what every personnel man in the NFL should have seen, is that the guy's in shape and the guy can play hard and play. And we heard Jameis and other NFL players say this guy's a mind-blowing workout warrior. He's in great shape. His mentality is unbelievable. He's in great shape. So if you knew going in that, okay, you're Jason Light and you knew you needed a running back desperately, Martin was a question mark. Before you even went to the draft, you knew you had to get somebody and they took Snoop McPlaybook. Why do you not bring in, what makes a GM, when he hears through the rumor mill that AP is in great shape, makes a GM decide, I don't even want to look at him. Other teams brought him in, the Seahawks, whatever. I don't even want to look at him.
They thought he was done.
But how do they miss so badly? How did a sage like yourself think, he's shot, he's done?
All right, look, I'm going to use a little bit of hyperbole here.
Uh-oh.
But just a little. I'm looking at Lee DeKemper. Bits, I want you to look at Lee DeKemper.
No, Steve's got better things to look at.
And I'm gonna say that DeKemper could have had 55 yards rushing yesterday. 55 yards on his first 14 carries.
I'll say 35, but I know where you're going.
That's how big the holes were, gentlemen. Now Peterson looked good. Not spectacular. He got to the second level on every freaking carry. Can somebody plug a hole over there? Where are the run fits? Where are the tackles? Lavonte David taking bad angles. Beckwith looking like a rookie. T.J. Ward taking a bad pursuit.
Wait a minute. I'm gonna.
The holes were enormous.
Instead of me disagreeing with you, I'm gonna pigeonhole Lee into disagreeing with you.
He's not gonna. He thinks he could have got more than 55 yards.
Ira just said Adrian Peterson did not look spectacular yesterday. Do you believe that? I thought he looked spectacular.
He looked good, and he looked better than Doug Martin. Oh, by the way, everybody, Doug Martin's going to solve all the problems. 3.8 yards per carry. That's pedestrian. I'm sorry.
If that's not spectacular, I don't know what the hell I'm watching.
I will say this about Peterson.
Did you see the holes, Isbits? What game were you watching?
Not all of them.
I'll say this about Peterson. I'll just say that. Sean Payton is arguably one of the better offensive minds in the game, correct?
Correct.
Peterson was number three running back on that team. No one saw Peterson more than Sean Payton the last, 6 months? What happened? I mean, did he get that dumb all of a sudden? Or did, by magic, just, you know, the stars align properly? Like Ira's saying, he took full advantage of holes the size you could drive my truck
Steve's
through.
Well, Steve's point might be they fed him the ball, and that's what he's been waiting for. They fed him the ball.
Look, Sean Payton's offense doesn't have a running back line up 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage and just barrel straight ahead. And the Saints took a flyer on a guy who didn't fit their offense just to see what would happen.
That's true.
And they did it before the draft because they didn't know they were going to get Kamara, who's been fantastic. But here's the point.
Oh, by the way.
Last year, the Saints led the league in scoring. So this was a luxury flyer. They didn't need Adrian Peterson to score points. They just took him as a flyer to see what happens. And they didn't need him. They got rid of him. They scored 52 points yesterday. This is a unique situation.
You don't what you don't want to acknowledge, or you're incapable of acknowledging, is that, listen to what I'm saying. When Palmer put the football in Peterson's gut 7 yards beyond scrimmage, by the time Peterson touched the ball, the Red Sea was parting.
Yeah.
How many times did he get the ball and you go, uh-oh? Before he made a move.
Before he hit the line of scrimmage, yeah.
Am I wrong?
No. You're absolutely right.
The run defense was horrible.
You're right, Ira. Your run defense was horrible, but there were still enough instances there where Peterson made his own room.
He did make a few moves.
And he ran incredibly hard. He ran like a 23-year-old. If we saw that guy, he was great yesterday. But it puts a spotlight, forgetting about the Bucs running game sucks. It's just not there. You know, you get an occasional long run by a Martin or a Rodgers, but it's not what it needs to be. I don't know if it's the line. I don't know if it's a combination. We're not seeing this grand road grader line, Ira. Well, what do you think of the O-line right now?
Bad game yesterday. Manhandled by Arizona. And by the way, another game when the Bucs throw more than 40 passes. And I don't want to be Mr. Statistic here, but some of them tell a story.
Yeah, but
they've won one game in the last 5 years when they've thrown more than 40 passes.
Generally, when you're doing that.
So what does that tell you?
You're behind.
Stop getting behind like you're doing against Minnesota and Arizona and try to have a little balance. I can't blame Cutter for not running a football in the second half yesterday. I can't blame him. Would you?
Oh, of course not. I got to ask you this, Ira. I want your feedback on this. You kind of glossed over this point, at least I think. You brought it up, but you really glossed over that thing, which is very damning for Mike Smith and maybe to a lesser degree, maybe not a lesser degree, to Cutter, but certainly Mike Smith. They had 9 days to prepare.
I agree.
And they look like they never prepared a minute.
It's the other side of playing on Thursday night football, the better thing.
No, I know you mentioned that in your opening monologue.
He mentioned that, but he didn't focus on it.
Yeah.
I think that's very damning.
Yeah, it's rough.
What were you looking at?
Rough territory, Ira. All right, let's go to the most important guy on the team remains Jameis Winston. And so he gets hurt. And we've seen some things on the internet. I saw it during the game, and I know you heard some other stuff, but I know you wanted to get one misnomer out there out of the way.
There's some suggestion in some small quarters that Winston was benched yesterday and it had nothing to do with his shoulder injury. I find that preposterous. If that turns out to be the case, Cutter is on thin ice right now. Never mind at the end of the season. You can't bench the first overall pick. You can't bench the face of the franchise early in the fifth game of a season when you're 2-2. You can't do that when you have Ryan Fitzpatrick behind him, who, by the way, played better than I thought he would.
Yeah.
Not great, but better than I thought he would. Steve, he produced touchdowns.
Considering who Ryan Fitzpatrick is, he was phenomenal.
Let's put it that way.
I got no problem with Fitzpatrick yesterday. Now, that's the first time I've seen him look good in a Buck uniform.
First time I've seen him look good in years.
And anybody who suggests that if Winston's healthy, Fitzpatrick should be the quarterback, that person doesn't know anything about football.
Well, that person needs to be institutionalized. That just is not going to happen.
Crazy.
So, yeah, there's been some of that actually even on sports radio, just whatever. He wasn't benched. If Cutter really did bench Jameis in the first quarter of a football game when you're 2-2, and obviously your whole game plan revolves around Jameis, then he should be fired, and that's not what happened. It's just too stupid. It's almost more stupid than letting go of Michael Bennett for no good reason.
Right. But going forward, what if Winston's 80%?
Well, what do you make of this? Do they baby and coddle Jameis here, or is season on the line? They're going to let him play hurt? What's your take on this?
Well, Lee, if they would have won this game, they would have had a little bit of wiggle room, a little bit of flexibility. You know, 3-3 is not horrible. Now, do you want to take a chance on going 2-4? You know, with Carolina coming to town, the first division game of the year, you could be out of this thing by November.
Yeah, there is no signs right now, none.
Winston wants to play.
Well, sure he does.
And if the doctor says there's not a danger of him, re-injuring it and being out for the year, I'm playing Winston.
This offense has shown me no signs that they're going to go on any kind of run. They're going to turn things around. I think I said this earlier in the podcast. I've written this quite a few times. This offense was sputtering in preseason. I dismissed it because preseason's a joke.
I'm starting to come around with you.
And it has continued in the regular season. Best I can tell, without doing serious play-by-play research, only 5 quarters through 5 games has this offense looked competent. Has this offense looked like the offense it is capable of being with all the weapons that are there. There are teams out there, schlock teams, Buffalo has no offense, that they're scoring points in the first quarter, and they drool over the talent that the Bucs have on offense. Something's amiss. What that is, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I'm of the belief that Cutter needs to implement an up-tempo offense a hell of a lot more as opposed to when it's like dire situations. He has to employ it in the first quarter. Second quarter, whatever. If that's what works for Jameis, if that's why your offense clicks, then what are you waiting on?
Steve, you know, at this point, where we stand right now on Tuesday, I don't think this is crazy. The game plan for Buffalo, run the ball 35 times. Run the football. What's wrong with that?
So you think he goes back to the...
Work for that Carolina game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, the Carolina mentality of, all right, you know what? We need to pound the ball. We need to overcommit and see what happens.
Give the defensive rest. What's wrong with it?
Major difference here. Major difference. The reason why Cutter was doing that was that through 3 games or 4 games, Winston had 8 interceptions.
That was
through 4
games.
Yeah. It was outrageous. And that's why he did it. Jameis, only one game has he thrown a pick. Only one game. So that's apples and oranges to me. The reason why they went all run against Carolina, even with Jacquez Green, was because he Cutter lost faith in Jameis as far as throwing picks.
Yeah,
that's
Dave,
not the case
Dave,
this year.
It gives you a physicality that they need to present.
Well, look, I agree with Lee, but it's an interesting take. So we'll let
what do you agree with Lee?
I wouldn't go into that attack mode of going to Buffalo to pound the rock relentlessly. I don't see it. Because
what if Winston's at 80%?
Then he shouldn't be on the field.
Yeah, if you can't trust him.
Now, I get what you're saying with the urgency and the season on the line and stuff like that. But, look, if the doctor says, here's the doctors coming. they can hear that. If the season, well, let's put it this way. If the team doctor says, hey, Jameis, no structural damage if he throws and plays.
MRI,
no
negative.
Problem. Everything's good, but he's going to have tenderness and soreness and rest is going to fix it. Well, then you have a question. Now, Jameis is a gamer, but he's still 23 years old. And if he's better off waiting for a couple of games, maybe you do that. I don't know. But I'll say this. Interesting stat, and we'll get more into this on Thursday. I looked up, Eric. I know you love these nuggets.
I left one out?
Sean McDermott is the new defensive coach, head coach of the Bills. Really intense guy.
He got a pretty good defense.
Pretty good defense. Leslie Frazier is his coordinator up
there.
Oh, by the way,
Frazier.
McDermott was a finalist for the job that Cutter got.
Yes.
Leslie Frazier, who was duly pushed aside by Lovie Smith.
Scapegoated.
What makes this a little scary for me is I went back, I looked at how did Cutter do in his 2 games as the Falcons coordinator against McDermott, and then his last 2 years with the Bucs. Horrible, Ira. Horrible. You think about last year's game, Brent Grimes had a pick 6. That's not Cutter's offense. What did they win that, 17-16 or something?
They ran the ball.
I'm just saying, they didn't put up points. In Atlanta with the 2014 high-flying Falcons, 2 touchdowns in 2 games by Cutter's offense against McDermott. There's 6 games of evidence that McDermott knows how to coach against Cutter's offense.
That's deep
little
research
scary.
Isbitt.
Little scary, but they still should have enough talent to score points. All right, Ira, coming back to this game.
I'm out of the prediction business, by the way, after my 5-game winning streak. I fall on my sword, gentlemen. I said it. I said the Bucs are ready to take off, Steve. Good things are about to happen. You can't be any more far off than I was, Steve. You know what? I came out flat.
Say it again, Ira.
I was flat.
I like hearing it. Say it again. All right, Ira, I'm going to hit you with 3 quick ones right now to close out this Sunday game. So, Ira, here we go. First, I'm going to hit you with this. We touched on it earlier, but it deserves its own little space in the stratosphere here. Vernon Hargraves, you see what's going on in the field. What's your take on him?
Very simple. Lee, this kid was drafted for one reason. Outstanding ball skills. Well, you can't have outstanding ball skills if you're 7 yards away from the ball. Everybody says he's not playing with any confidence. That's obvious. Mike Smith says he's not being coached to give that kind of a cushion. Well, what does that leave us as a conclusion? Hargraves doesn't trust himself that he can hang with these guys. He doesn't want to get beat deep. The cushions are unacceptable. 70.9%, as Isbitt said, correcting me when I said 71. I like to round off, Lee. I'm rounding off. 71 or 70.9, whatever you want to use. That's Lovie Smithville, gentlemen. And we used to make fun of that. Isn't this defense better than 2014?
Well,
if Hargraves isn't getting the job done, I'm ready to try somebody else.
This analysis about Hargraves and his cushion, lack of cushion, whatever, the liberty that Mike Smith gets, cop out. It's that simple. It's a cop out. If Hargraves' cushion is the problem, we're led to believe it is, but I don't know that for a fact because I'm not in the meeting rooms. I'm not breaking down tape. If that is the issue, then Mike Smith, tell him to get his rear end on the line of scrimmage or you're on the bench, one of the two. That's a cop-out what Smith is doing.
Hey, by
he's
the way.
The guy. He's the defensive coordinator. He's the coach. His responsibility.
By the way, I want to add to what DeKemper just said. This is a critical point that we haven't made. And I noticed this. It jumped off the screen yesterday, just like my beet salad. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but I'm sure you guys noticed this. Did you see how physical Arizona's DBs were with Buck receivers.
Well, they're on
their
a different
hands
level.
Were all over them.
Sure.
And they never got called. Try that, Buck people. Try it. You might get called
you
once
might like
in a while.
It, like Mikey.
Their hands were all over them. And the Bucks don't play that way. And Arizona played it, and they got away with it.
I'll give you
of that is reputation for Patrick Peterson. They're not going to give him the chintzy call.
I'll give you.
But they were all doing it. Very handsy on Buck receivers. And it really screwed up their patterns.
Ira, the fix. The fix. What's the fix for Hargraves? Do you think he gets fixed this year? That's the question.
The fix is you sit him down for a game. That's the only way. You sit him down for a game. That's the way you get his attention. That's your sense of urgency. Look, how many times does Cutter have to tell us? If they're one of our 53, I got confidence in them. They can play. Now, that's coach speak. Lee, I know what you're going to say. But if they're on the roster, that's got to mean that they think he's the guy's competent. I'm ready to give somebody else a chance.
Well, here's the trap you're setting yourself up for. And a lot of Bucks fans right now want Vernon Hargraves thrown back into Gainesville.
I don't want him cut.
If you don't want Vernon Hargraves, which I understand why you wouldn't, the way he's playing, but if you don't want Vernon Hargraves, that means guess who plays instead of him? The noted cornerback, cornerback, Ryan Smith. Is that what you want, people? Is that what you want? Do you really want that, people? Be careful what you wish for. Now, about Vernon Hargraves, if Sunday's debacle wasn't bad enough, this cop out about, oh, we give the guy liberty, blah, blah, blah. Mike Smith's digging his career grave doing this kind of crap. You pointed this out before we started recording. You know, when you were saying all these players are talking about they're flat, and you said, don't these people know the Glazers are listening to this? I say the same about Mike Smith. You know, well, he has the liberty of doing that, even though that's the problem, and he's not fixing the problem because that's a cop out, and guess who's listening to that? The G's. I just think it's a mess. And, you know, bad enough that game Sunday was as terrible as it was. And with Mike Smith and his nonsense, I understand why they're playing Hargraves because of Ryan Smith and you got an investment. I get it. But the fact that he's regressed this bad, last year he was competent. He's incompetent now. He's regressed. That goes right on coaching.
Steve, you sit Hargraves and you say he's got an ankle sprain.
Well, look.
You sit him.
Well, I don't know if you say you have an ankle sprain. What the hell you have to play games for? Just say his coach's decision. He's not starting.
He's not starting.
Right. Now, they can move McClain outside. That's where he played a little bit with Carolina in the Super Bowl in their playoff run.
I'm not getting rid of Vernon Hargraves, I am sitting him.
You could put McClain outside for a game, bring back Javion Elliott, who played okay last year, was on the field during a lot of this good stuff by the Bucks that we saw.
He's not playing winning football.
So, I'm just asking.
Asking
the sage of a fix. Maybe they do have a shakeup. I have no problem with throwing McClain outside, bringing Elliott, tell Hargraves, watch the game. We told McClain how to cover. Why pay attention? I don't know. Something's got to give, though, because you got no bye week. You got 11 games to go. You got big-time receivers coming down the pike. Two games with New Orleans. It lights it up like a pinball machine.
And quarterback's coming down the pike.
And Atlanta lights it up, and he's going to have to cover Ted Ginn. You going to give Ted Ginn cushion?
Or Benjamin?
Or whoever. Yeah, well, Ginn's on the Saints now. But
Benjamin's with the Panthers.
Back.
Yeah. I'll say this. I don't want to get on Buffalo too quickly here because that's what Thursday's about, our Thursday podcast, Iris Thursday podcast. Bucks lose to Buffalo. This season's going to spiral.
It's in danger.
I can't go there. I just can't go there. Just like I couldn't go there at halftime yesterday. I thought the Bucks, you know, have a showing, do something, and you know they did a lot of good things in that game. They really did later because
shame on you.
No. I'm not discounting anything. I'm saying, but it's very easy to roll over. It's very easy to lose 40-7 and 40-14 and get out of town. We saw them do it last year. You've seen that happen in your career many times, which moves me to the question of the day, really, for Bucks fans or the week. Bucks fans are in two camps, Ira. The people saying, "Hey, it's one game. Calm down. They lost a road game. Jameis, the franchise quarterback, got hurt 10 minutes in. It's one game." And there's the rest of them who are thinking about all the topics we talked about. Is it okay, Ira? Is it fair to just say, "Hey, this is just one game"?
Very easy. Very, very, very easy answer, Lee. It's not one game. They played two road games, and they've been horrible in both. It's not one.
Both
games. Now it's two.
Yeah.
One's acceptable or explainable. Two is not.
Offense has a pattern of sputtering.
Two is not. It's unacceptable. No excuses. Healthy team. You're missing one starter. One starter in the fifth game of the season?
Like
people,
I said,
people die for that, and it's not your quarterback.
All right, they lost the quarterback 5 minutes.
Quarterback? What was the score?
Seven minutes into the game.
What was the score?
14-0, I think.
Yeah, 14-0. Like Winston was going to make a difference in that game, the Kemper.
Well, if he's not going to make a difference in the game, then we got the wrong quarterback.
Anybody.
We got the wrong quarterback.
They couldn't stop anybody. Couldn't stop anybody.
They also couldn't score in the first half.
I'm with Steve. If you don't have any faith in Jameis, then you got to get another quarterback.
I didn't have any faith, but the way that defense played, they weren't going to win that football game, and they didn't deserve to win that football game, period.
All right, Ira, that's what I'm saying. That's what we're talking about here, right? It's what we're arguing, because I would say that, you know what, if Jameis doesn't get hurt there, maybe it's 24-10 at halftime.
Yeah.
And maybe his leadership rights the ship a little bit.
They never stopped them when it counted.
I got you.
There's no question about
it. Not rewriting history. We're just talking football, Sage.
Last year, they were a pretty good road team, Lee. Pretty good road team.
Yeah.
This year, 0-2, two debacles.
Yeah. Well, I heard DeMar Dotson say that their philosophy for this season was win all the home games and you should be okay. You should be in the playoffs.
There's a headline for your Wednesday column, Ira. Double debacles. There we go. You can write about the road.
Double D's.
DeMar Dotson also said they left a lot of meat on the bone after the New England game. Guess what? The bones were the skeletons of the Bucks on the field.
They got a new chicken is what they get. All right, Ira.
You got one more,
but first we have to remind everybody, look, if you've made it this far in the podcast, it means you enjoy it. You're one of the many thousands who enjoys the podcast. We haven't called for this for a while, but it's time to man up and leave a review of the podcast on iTunes. Very easy. 2, 3, 4, 5 sentences.
This is a nationally rated podcast, Stephen. I think you should mention that.
Subscribe to the podcast on Google Play, iTunes, Podbean. It's in other places as well. We mentioned that early, Ira. You're 29th.
I mentioned it again.
Still 29th on the Google Play top charts. Actually, Stephanopoulos made a move on you at last check.
Oh.
He was 30th, so you're hanging in there. But seriously, leave a review of the podcast. It helps drive the prominence of the podcast. Sage and I and Lee, we look at them. Podbean, iTunes, very easy. Get it done. Subscribe to the podcast. You just get a little alert, a link to your phone or an alert, instant download, however you want to do it. And then you don't have to wonder when it posts on JoeBucksFan.com. So,
Lee, Stephanopoulos is talking about Mike Pence. I'm talking about Mike Smith, and I'm still beating him. What does that tell you?
It tells you all kinds of things. All right, Ira. Now let's head to this. Kendall Beckwith, kind of a rough game for him. He's been the star of the show in place of Quan Alexander. Is this just you think that was a little rookie wall for him yesterday?
You see, now that's the kind of answer that he was looking for from his previous question. Do you give the Bucks a pass? It's one bad game. And I said absolutely not. Beckwith, I do give a pass. He's playing at an exceptional level, Lee. I think he was a strong candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year after the first month of the season.
Sure was.
Very early. He's going to be a heck of a player. Didn't play well. Who did? You said that. Who did? You know what? Swaggy Baker played, I think, his best game as a Buck.
I'd agree.
For game 5. Grimes was okay. Not great, but okay.
Led the team in tackles.
What do you want the guy to do? He got a pick. He led the team in tackles. He didn't mail it in.
No, I didn't say he mailed it in, but he took his share of beatings in the secondary.
You think Hargraves is bad? Where would this team be without Grimes?
Oh, you're right. But
they may have one win.
Beckwith's going to be a good player.
They'd be. That was called Minnesota.
Yeah, that's what I mean. One win, maybe.
See,
maybe.
If and when they get Alexander back, and I thought it was going to be this week. What is going on with this Alexander injury?
It's pretty clear. The doctors won't clear him. It reminds me of Austin Seferian Jenkins. Austin Seferian Jackwagon, when Lovey threw him under the bus week in and week out. He's practicing. He's ready to go. He's not there.
Who's in the middle of the most debated topic in the NFL this week? ASJ.
Horrible call.
ASJ.
Horrible.
That would have been the second touchdown of the day, and yeah. I believe he scored last week.
You know, when the freaks out there that think games are rigged, right there is ammunition for him.
Oh, yeah, you know what? As long as we hit on ASJ, I got to ask you, Ira, because we saw what happened here with ASJ, almost similar to Aqib Talib, where the time came where you had to get rid of the guy. You just couldn't deal with shenanigans anymore.
Rope, yeah.
But you know what? there are organizations that will stick by guys to the end and get them to that next level personally so they can thrive. Do you think there's any chance, with given that ASJ, I think, has 23 or 24 catches, more than he ever had in his career with the Bucks this season, and he was suspended the first two games of this year. He's got like 25 catches in four games, and he's playing great football.
What's your point, Isbett?
Do you think there's any chance the Glazers hold that against Jason Light, not only for drafting ASJ, but for not keeping him and getting him past these issues? Because you know that the team keeps tabs on these guys and what's going on. And if a guy has a drinking problem or is screwed up, it's on the team to intervene and get him some help.
I would say the saving grace for Light in that case was that he found Cameron Brate out of Harvard when nobody wanted Brate. Now he turned out to, I believe, over the last two seasons, has the most touchdowns of any tight end in football. That is crazy. That is crazy that he has more touchdowns than any tight end in football. Cameron Brate. Mm-hmm. So that's a saving note for Light. But as far as your point on ASJ, I'm cutting him no slack. He stole money from this team for 2 years, and he had a problem. He was in denial. Is that on Light? Well, I'll say this. The one thing that Light said about the draft, which I always remember, most of the mistakes are made from the head up, not from the guy doesn't have the physical talent. Boy, I think he's right.
Well.
And look, I don't wish ASJ any harm. I don't think Lee does either.
You didn't answer my question.
But he had to go. He had to go. And
so you don't think the Glazers would hold his resurgence against Light and an inability to?
I don't think Talib has anything to do with Jason Light. I think
not
Talib. Light gets a pass on
ASJ. So you don't think the Glazers hold ASJ's revival against Light?
Not enough sample size. Right. We'll see about ASJ. But tight end is a point of pride for the Bucks right now. So I think that mitigates against it.
One of these days, that's all I had to say. But from what I've been told, I will just say this. The Glazers have evidence that they won't hold this against Light with A.S. Jackwagon. There's evidence out there. So I've been told. No, it won't. And remember who was calling the shots when he was drafted. Now, Jason had every move Jason met had to have a stamp of approval from you-know-who. You know, Mr. Champaign, Illinois right now.
Steve, on Thursday, we're going to look ahead to this Buffalo game, which is bits all of a sudden. I don't know about must win. We don't like must wins in week six for the Bucks, but the difference between 3-3 and 2-4 is enormous, gentlemen. Enormous.
Of course. That's what makes the season great. It's a freaking crazy roller coaster, and we love it and embrace it. Ira, do what you do, man. Keep it up. We'll keep visiting your podcast.
They were flat, Steve. They were flat.
I know. Read Ira's column. He's very proud of his nursery rhyme to open it up. Flat. It's already getting all kinds of reviews. I'm sure the Bucks are loving that at One Buck Palace. All right, get out of here, Ira.